有几个人啊？像您各位啊，在地的车就是其他国家，欧洲，我看到欧洲、台湾，还有英国，我们这一些侨胞人来欢迎参加我们今天的讲座。那在这之前，我想跟大家讨论一下，就是这讲座是由爱尔兰急难救助协会主办，然后邀请了我们欧益盟还有全球欧洲。是全球医学联盟的那个欧洲分会一起来组成的，所以谢谢感谢特别感谢 Victor 来帮助我们，还有感谢欧台生的平台让这一次的平台跟 YouTube 能顺利的进行。那陆续进来的侨胞们，麻烦就是因为我们需要截图，然后这个活动呢将会在侨务电子报上面发行，所以我们需要截图，需要如果可以的话，麻烦各位朋友们把你们的镜头打开，然后你们可以继续按静音，没有关系。那还有一点就是我们今天要参加的抽奖活动。如果你们在你们的镜头右下方呢，看到一个 chat 的功能，在留言功能里面，我已经把这一次要抽奖的链接贴上去了。那麻烦各位要加入参与抽奖的人呢，到你的 chat box，你会看到一个 link，然后点进去之后呢，麻烦将您的名字、你的电话号码，然后您的联络方式，输入进去。我们将在这个讲座的最后呢，跟大家发布公布一下幸运者是谁。那这次我们要特别感谢就是侨委会赞助我们这次的活动。Now we're going to start with the talk. Our first speaker is Dr. David Shaw. So Dr. David Shaw actually studied medicine in South Africa, Johannesburg. And now he's doing his PhD degree in the University of Oxford in UK. And he's also an anaesthetist working in the Republic of Ireland as well. So thank you. Over to you, Dave.
Okay. Hello, everybody. Thank you very much for the opportunity to speak here today. I'm just going to share my screen quickly. Ming, can you see that?
Yes.
I see it.
Right. I'm going to give you guys a whistle stop tour of overview of mental disorders at required ability. And very pleased to be here. Just interrupt me if you want our question hold until Deborah's waiting for you. I hope you guys enjoy it. And for a while, I'm also trying to keep this enough, so if you don't have a moment, maybe you'll understand. Right, so just a quick disclaimer. This doesn't constitute individual medical advice, and this is a recommendation for you. It's not a reference institute, it's a G or a medical health practitioner. But hopefully, there's some insights and sort of conditions that you might see in the community. So, if I bore you to death halfway through, here are the takes. Mental health is almost dreaming. They occur along a spectrum of disease, from functional to non-functional, mild to severe. And the good news is that there is hope. Treatments exist, and they do work. So you might be asking yourselves, why on earth would an anaesthetist give this talk? Why not a psychiatrist? And it's a reasonable question. Well, the first thing is that, of course, we get trained during our medical degree to handle psychiatric conditions. We do psychiatric modules, and we also do psychology as well. The second thing is that we often see these patients on the ward during our training. When we do our clinical rotations as junior doctors, we rotate through psychiatry, and it's very seldom the case that the patient will come to hospital without one of these conditions. As you'll see further on in talk, these are incredibly common. Patients come to hospital with a variety of conditions, often with a mental health disorder as well. As an anaesthetist, I have to put these patients to sleep. So I need to understand which drugs they're on, and they get sick with surgical conditions as well, like appendicitis, where they'll need to go under anesthesia. And so we have to be very aware of their condition as well as the drugs that they're taking. And So as a last resort, we get involved in something called electroconvulsive therapy, where we run a current through the patient's brain and essentially perform a hard reset, as one of my colleagues said to me the other day. So we're quite holistic and pretty well trained to deal with mental health conditions. And of course, the reality is that the majority of mental health conditions will be seen by generalist doctors. Very few will actually end up going to be seen by specialist psychiatric doctors. And those are usually quite severe conditions. So what on earth are mental health disorders? Quite difficult to pin down a decent definition for this. But essentially, they're a collection of disorders, and they affect your mood, your thinking, and your behavior. As I mentioned earlier, they are really part of a spectrum of disease, and they're not primarily caused by something correct. So we have to exclude things like brain tumors. We have to exclude seizure disorders like temporal lobe epilepsy. And it is also the case that some chronic diseases like liver disease, heart failure, kidney failure will put you into depression. And in some instances, that's a reasonable response to the disease. The key thing about primary mental health disorders is that they occur in the absence of all of these things, and they require specialist treatment as a result. So here are the major categories, and I've really simplified this down. But these are the most sort of exciting categories that you'll see in the community. So the first category is psychotic disorders. And the hallmark, sort of prototypical example would be schizophrenia. If anybody's watched the movie A Beautiful Mind, which recounts John Nash's life, he was the famous game theory mathematician. He suffered from schizophrenia. So you have delusions, hallucinations, and you really struggle to determine what is real and what isn't. Then we have the mood disorders. Everybody's well aware of things like major depressive disorder. Awareness has increased around this disorder. And for good reason, we're going to explore some of the epidemiology a little bit later. We also get the anxiety disorders. They can be generalized disorders like a generalized anxiety disorder or something more specific like agoraphobia, which is the fear of leaving your house. And then, of course, you get personality disorders. Antisocial is commonly called to it's commonly referred to as the personality disorder where people commit a lot of crimes. but there are a number of other personality disorders as well. So psychopaths would be examples of antisocial disorders. But here, there are actually, just illustrating here, there are 22 categories of different diagnostic groups. So we also get things like sleep-wake disorders, gender dysphoria, and a whole raft of other diagnoses. So those are the key ones that you would usually see most commonly in the community. Now, this slide debated whether or not to put it in, but I think it's useful to kind of get a sense of what's going on. So if you imagine any sort of group of people in any population all across the world and any particular disease, let's say it's schizophrenia, for instance, there'll be a majority of people that are normal and a very small minority, and this is a conserved percentage usually, 1% of any population across the world suffers from schizophrenia. So this would be a conserved proportion, a small minority suffers from very significant severe disease. But the majority of people will be normal. However, there will be a minority that sort of slide in and out between mild to moderate disorder. And these are the people who often go undiagnosed in the community and suffer quite a bit as a result. So I spoke about this mental health spectrum. What exactly is it? Well, mental health practitioners like to think about patients or individuals being healthy, moving into a coping phase, maybe struggling a little bit, and then suddenly becoming unwell and decompensating. And any disease can, in fact, be considered either mild, moderate, or severe. However, it actually gets a little bit more complicated than that. So let me just move forward here. So what you'll see over here is that cause of the particular disease may be an individual's genes and an interaction with their environment, maybe a very stressful experience, can lead to the development of symptoms. But you can see that each of these symptoms overlap quite significantly. So none of these symptoms are specific to a particular disease. And then to make matters even worse, the diseases themselves overlap quite a bit. So if you suffer from cognitive impairment, you may have mental retardation, or you could be on the autism spectrum, or you could be schizophrenic. And these kind of blend into each other, so an autistic individual may also suffer schizophrenia somewhere in the middle here. So the key thing is that all of these diseases kind of occur on a continuum, on a spectrum, and there's significant overlap in symptoms as well as the disease itself. And just to illustrate that again in another way, all of these shades here gradually move into different diagnostic categories. And the major problem with this approach is that we're categorizing people, perhaps inappropriately, when it really occurs along a dimension or along a continuum. So, here's another way of illustrating how patients may end up becoming non-functional. A functional individual may be coping quite well until they cross a threshold when they need to seek help. And that threshold will usually be indicated by an individual who's struggling personally, in social relationships, or occupation. Once a patient has crossed this threshold, they often need help involuntarily, perhaps. Maybe they lack insight and they need somebody to actually bring them into a mental health practitioner or to a medical doctor. Really, what we would like to do is kind of prevent people from having to cross this threshold where they need help involuntarily. Prevention is better than cure. And this is something that healthcare systems are not particularly geared towards at the moment. So what are the causes? Well, from a medical perspective, we consider the causes of these diseases to be misfiring of brain circuits. So, for example, if you have psychotic disorder, there is misfiring of these neurons which release dopamine. And so if there's too much dopamine, and as a result of that dopamine, you exhibit psychotic symptoms and you need to have antipsychotic medication to reduce the level of dopamine. And similarly, in the case of depression, the main circuits involved are serotonin. People may have heard about this. The antidepressants that are commonly given will increase serotonin levels. Another brain circuit that's involved is norepinephrine or noradrenaline. And so these are targets of treatment. But it's also worth pointing out that there's an interaction with the environment. So up here in the Northern Hemisphere, during the winter months when things are dark and depressing, you literally are depressed because you're not seeing sunlight enough. And that's not triggering the correct brain pathways. And so you go into a state of seasonal depression as a result. Now, whenever we try to understand these sorts of entities, they're complex problems with lots of different interactions. And so we usually have to develop some sort of model to understand what's going on. These models allow us to understand and to some extent predict what will happen. But the key thing from a medical perspective is it allows us to intervene. Drawbacks of this approach is that, well, they rely on an abstraction of reality with plenty of assumptions, but we usually have a limited number of variables that we can put into our explanatory model. The key thing to understand really is that, as a famous statistician once said, all models are wrong, but some models are still useful for us to understand and to intervene in a disease process. So the first explanatory model that helps us understand why these diseases occur in the first place, it's the biopsychosocial model. And in this model, we see it's an interaction, really. Physical mental health is an interaction between your biology, so your genes, your social interactions, the environment that you live in, and your psychological state, whether or not you're depressed or stressed out, or under a lot of pressure. We can refine this a little bit more by saying, well, disease really is the interaction between your genes and many environmental variables. And this together would be considered a multifactorial explanation of the disease. So for those of you who don't know how genes can cause disease, the DNA of cells ends up making proteins. These proteins form functional components of our bodies. So there are proteins in our neurons that cause the production, the release of serotonin, for instance. And so if you have a genetic abnormality, you may produce less serotonin, or your neurons may work less effectively compared to other people. The key thing is that this may work perfectly fine in one context, but in a different environment may work very differently and may not function. So this is a rather busy image, but if we just start on the left, this just gives you an idea of how these interactions may look. An individual is wrapped up in layers of their environment. Their living conditions, their neighborhoods, their environment, the institutions surrounding them, like schools and medical facilities. All of this goes well over time, you have a healthy life. But if you receive an abnormal exposure, then unfortunately this can lead to disease along the way. And so this really summarizes it quite nicely, that the individual and health particularly of that individual is sort of the product of all of these multiple layers of their environment. And if any of these things should perhaps adversely, so for example, if you don't have access to health, you have suboptimal education, housing isn't great, maybe you don't have a lot of family and social support, you may then develop a disease, perhaps something like depression. Diagnose these disorders? Well, we use the Bible. This is the Diagnostics and Statistics Manual, which is published in America. And this was most recently updated, I think, around 2013. This gives you a flavor of the sort of thing that we would use. We would look at the condition, and then you would have to meet a series of criteria. And the key thing here is that you can see that this is extremely subjective, and it categorizes individuals when in reality, as we've seen, disease occurs along a continuum or along different dimensions. Unfortunately, there are some limitations. We don't have any imaging at this point to be able to reliably detect these diseases, so we rely on subjective criteria. And there are no blood biomarkers. We can't do a blood test to determine whether or not you are depressed, although there is a lot of work being done on this. And in fact, there's a lot of work being done in Taiwan on this, and there have been some early breakthroughs. But no marker, unfortunately, is 100% specific or sensitive this point in time. So smashing through that, let's have a look at how common these disorders are in the community. In order to understand how common these are, most epidemiologists, I think, would rely on major studies conducted by the Global Burden of Disease. So I'm going to be referencing data coming out of this study, which was published in The Lancet. And in particular, I'm going to be looking at the study leading to 12 mental disorders in all the territories involved in this. So, 1 in 8 people live with a mental disorder, according to the WHO. It's the 13th leading cause of disability globally. It is responsible for 125 million disability-adjusted life years. That's a complicated way of saying it's responsible for 125 million years of healthy life lost. So, a disability-adjusted life year, or DALY, is the sum of the years of life lost due to death and the years of life lived with a disability. And so essentially this means that 125.3 million years of healthy life are lost every year as a result of these conditions. At the moment, estimated cost of 2.5 trillion per year, and this is projected to rise up to 6 trillion by 2030. And if we have a look at the rankings here by disability-adjusted life year, if you look here in 1990, depressive disorders and self-harm were in the top 20. If you have a look here in 2019, depressive disorders have moved up to 13th place. That's quite significant. Now, if we have a look at this beautiful matrix, which shows years of life lost due to disability for all ages, we see that depressive disorders come in second place overall against all the burdens of disease in the world. This includes heart disease, liver disease, etc. And anxiety disorders make number 8. So we already have 2 in the top 10 across all ages. And if we similarly look at the matrix here that looks at this from the perspective of healthy life years lost due both to death and to years lived in disability, depressive disorders are number 30, as we saw earlier, and anxiety disorders 24. So pretty significant burden. And you might wonder, how does this affect the different sexes? Well, here, this is a little bar chart that shows years of life lost, essentially years of good health lost in the millions on the x-axis, and on the y-axis we have age groups. And you can see that females are slightly more affected than males, and this is primarily due to anxiety and depressive disorders. We sort of see the peak onset of disease between the ages of 30 to 34 years. I mean, there are slight differences between males and females, but overall you can see that the distribution sort of hits you when you're supposed to be at your most productive. So you lose quite a lot of productive years as a result of these disorders. Flying over, where do we see the biggest burden of disease? Globally, we You see it all over. The red highlights the largest burden of disease. The West is clearly very highly affected. I think there's paucity of data for some regions like China and Russia. And Africa is interesting because of the tight-knit communities there. They often do better with mental illnesses compared to Westerners. But it is a global problem, sure, as you can see from this. Accessing mental health services is a bit of a, it's another tricky area because the individual often requires a gatekeeper to help them pass through to the mental health facilities. So this would usually be the general practitioner here in the UK or family doctor if you're in the US, and they're responsible for appropriate referrals. You can go the private route, but you often have to pay, and that's another barrier to access. And you can self-refer to certain services. Again, you have to know what you're doing. You have to be quite clued up as to which services you can refer yourself to, and that often represents a barrier if you're not sure. How do we manage these disorders? Well, we focus on the five Ps: presenting problem, predisposing factors in an individual's life, precipitating, perpetuating, protective factors. We have non-pharmacological interventions like psychotherapy, where you go for therapy with a trained or a licensed therapist. We can also, in very rare cases, there may be a need to undergo surgery. This was very common in the olden days. If you've seen the movie One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest, you know all about frontal lobe lobotomies. This isn't performed anymore. But in some instances, with really intractable cases, you may need to perform certain surgeries on patients. And electroconvulsive therapy, as I mentioned earlier, is where we run a current through the brain to reset the nervous system. And of course, there are pharmacological interventions. We can give a whole raft of medications to deal with whatever condition you may have. One question we often get asked is, are drugs effective? Now, this is a huge study that was done. It's called a meta-analytic study, and it was published in The Lancet. It's not too important to get into the details of the study. I just want to illustrate that all the drugs are listed. These are all antidepressants on the left-hand side. And basically, if these blue squares occur on the right of this middle line, then it's a good drug. So you can see that for all of these drugs, there's a bit of variation between drugs, but for all of these drugs, they are effective in treating the symptoms. However, another question that gets asked is, well, what about side effects? And this is measured as acceptability. So here, anything to the right is good. Anything to the left, completely to the left, is bad. What you can see is, again, there's a fair variation. Some drugs do cause a lot of side effects. But by and large, these drugs are acceptable with acceptable side effects. And so they are useful, and there is hope. These drugs certainly do. So here are some of my reflections about some of the experiences that I've had in the hospital. I think that we, to some extent, we've lost a sense of stoicism. Viktor Frankl, the author of A Man's Search for Meaning, once said, "To live is to suffer. To survive is to find meaning in the suffering." And I think it's quite useful to bear that in mind, as life can be extremely difficult. But having a stoic mentality certainly is. We have an ancient body that was adapted to a very different environment. Today things are fast-paced, we're constantly exposed to light, technology, we're always in on mode. And even though things have become incredibly complex, the sense of adventure, the challenge of raising a family or hunting for your food has been driven off into the mundane. And I think this plunges a lot of people into depression. We're not taught how to deal with our feelings. And mental distress may just be a signal that something is wrong and we need to act on that. There's a very famous psychiatrist in Scotland who said, well, insanity just seems to be a sane reaction to the insane world. And I quite like that at times. It's a useful way to think about it from a different perspective. There's a lot that can be done now. Unfortunately, it's not glamorous. It's really just paying attention to your daily routines, diet and exercise, getting enough sleep, avoiding technologies that keep you awake with bright blue lights, avoiding social media. Some people enjoy journaling. The edge of the bed test is an interesting one because it allows you to, essentially, you sit on the edge of your bed in the dark and you think about what you've been avoiding, what you've been putting, or what you need to change in your life. And whether you like it or not, you're going to get the answers if you do that. And the Stoic Triangle is an interesting concept, which I'm just going to briefly flash up here. is essentially three things. Take responsibility for what you can, what you're responsible for, what's in your domain of control. Focus on what you control. Don't worry about all the other stuff. And the Greek arete, which means to put your best foot forward in every situation. If you do this correctly, you'll achieve what's called eudaimonia, which is to live a good life. Now, like him or hate him, Jordan Peterson, the famous Canadian psychologist, says this is how you do it practically. Tell the truth, find meaning by taking responsibility. It doesn't have to be a big thing. It just has to be something, cleaning up your room or looking after your family. Act locally, build up, always aim. Well, I'm at the end of my talk. Thank you all for paying attention, if you're still with me. I just wanted to end on this idea. There is this band, Bring Me Horizon, and this individual suffered. The lead singer suffered from terrible depression, and he put pen to paper and he wrote it out in a song. And I think that art is the deep mediator between the subconscious, the unexplored subconscious, this huge depth in our minds that we don't fully understand, and conscious awareness. This individual said, "Put me out of my misery. My mind feels like an archenemy. Can't look me in the eyes. I don't know what hurts the most, holding on or letting go, reliving my memories that are killing me one by one." We think that is a perfect explanation of how someone feels when they're suffering from major depressive disorder. Just a little reminder to have sympathy for these people, because it really is very difficult situation to be in. And with that, I thank you for your attention. If you wish to get in touch, take a screenshot of this QR code. You're welcome to email me anytime. And I think I'm going to switch back to Ming. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank you, Dave. That was actually wonderful. It's quite impressive. How affected, when you talk about the daily that was affected by the psychiatric disease, I mean, 125 million. I mean,
right.
It's an amazing, you know, period of time. So, and let me just, before I carry on, 我可不可以请新加入的侨胞们就是麻烦把到你们的留言there's a section, there's a link for the lucky draw.所以那边有抽奖活动，所以在那边请麻烦点进去输入您的资料，然后我们会在讲座结束之前呢公布各位得奖的名字，谢谢。那do you mind just stop sharing your screen for a bit?
Yep, sure.
请问各位有没有什么问题？ Is there any questions for Dr. Shaw? Any questions?
Yes, I do have one question.
Yeah.
I don't know if I understand you correctly showing the pictures of the depression diseases, that the most depression diseases are occurred in Australian. Is that right? Do I understand you correctly?
Was that when I was showing the country distribution of disease?
Yeah, right.
Yeah, so they did it in ranges based on disability adjusted life years. So Australia was in red because it was one of the top countries that was affected by the burden of disease due to all mental health disorders, not simply depression. But I don't think it was the top specifically. It was just in red, much like the rest of the West.
Because this country has a lot of natures.
I know, yeah.
It's just too wrong, you know?
Yeah.
Asia, or European country with the most this kind of diseases because of the work burden, you know,、
yes.
the to survive, but Australia in the natures.That's the point. I really don't get it.
Yes, it's an interesting one. I suppose that there could be some biases in terms of how they collect data. I imagine that they probably don't record it very well for Aboriginal populations in Australia, and they're probably recording a lot of it from Western populations in Australia. And of course, these are the same people who migrated over from Europe, and they carried their depressive genes with them. So I think it does highlight the genetic predisposition to disease. Because I mean, we see a similar thing in South Africa. The European populations in South Africa are extremely prone to depression and mental health disorders. So it's an excellent point. I don't have a specific answer for you. I agree with you that you would think with the beautiful nature and the exposure to sunlight, you think people would be happier compared to here where it's all dark and depressing. But unfortunately, I think it's really complex. I think it's partly due to genetics. I think it's partly due to other exposures. And I think it may just be due to combination of the lifestyles that people are leading as well. So that's what I would say. But it is a difficult area to answer you properly, more holistically. But yeah, good point.
Okay, well, thank you. Yeah.
Can I just please ask everyone, we just need to take a screenshot of everyone that's attending the talk. It's possible for everyone to have their camera on, but you can mute yourself if you want, so that we just can take a nice photo for the news later. Thank you. David, if I can just ask one question, which is quite shocking when I saw one of your slides.
Yes.
You're talking about the depressive disorder.
Yes.
And you're saying for the age group.
Yeah, for all ages.
Five. Yes, there's one between... and basically the teenager and the younger kids.
Mm-hmm.
I think the depressive disorder is actually number four.
Yeah.
You know, and I mean, it's quite shocking because I mean, you know, basically you're telling me like it's the fourth disorder or illness amongst the teenagers.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think what's starting to emerge now is a lot of this is driven by social media. A lot of it is, you know, it goes beyond just online harassment and bullying. It's actually individuals comparing their lives to other people on social media. Of course, people are sort of putting their best episodes, their best images out there and into social media, into the ether of social media. And then people are comparing their lives to this unobtainable standard, really. And they're kind of feeling sort of like imposters. So I think, to a large extent, social media is driving a lot of this in the younger age groups. But it's a combination of many things. It's the lifestyle it's always been on. It's exposure to these devices. It's not getting enough sleep. It's not focusing on the basic tenets of living a good life. So, yeah, all of this is coming into play. I do think there's a lot of evidence now emerging that social media is driving mass depression in children. So...
are there any other questions?
There is another question.
Yes. Hi, Dave. Thanks for the talk. It's very good. I have a question. So after seeing the presentation, I still know very little. However, I do want to ask a question when you mentioned that we should have sympathy.
Yes.
You, the people or friends in our community or even our families.
Yeah.
But how do we approach them or how do we support them in a very general way, or even to the people that we're not that familiar with, because I think a lot of us here is somehow involved in the Taiwanese community.
Yeah.
And we do want to lend a helping hand.
Yeah. Yeah.
We heard somebody is encountering this kind of mental challenges. So
yes.
Is there any advice or experience that you can share with us?
Yes, I think it's such an excellent question, and I'm actually quite sad that I didn't include a slide, at least one slide on this, because this is part of the challenge. You know, knowing that they're so common, it's inevitable that you're going to interact with someone who's suffering from at least one of these disorders at some stage of your life. And it's very easy to get angry with them and to blame them for their own situation. Say, well, if you know, you're unemployed, why don't you just get up and do something? Why don't you just get better, you know, you kind of want them to just get better. Of course, it's not the right way to handle it. So the first thing is to just put yourself in their shoes and just understand, based on what we've seen, that this is a real disorder. There's really a misfiring of circuits and they actually really need help. And I think that, you sound like a really kind person. You want to do some good. I think the first step is just acknowledging that and saying, look, I think you're in trouble. Speak honestly. You know, this is one of Professor Jordan Peterson's tenets. Speak honestly, go to this person and say, I can see you're in crisis. I recognize that you're in crisis and I want to help you. Take my hand and I will help you through. And there are so many resources online. It's just a matter of getting them into the correct system, really, just referring them up. So it could be to refer them to a general practitioner and say, I'm going to go with you. I'm actually going to help you go to a general practitioner, and we're going to get this process going. Or it could be simply, you know, looking up online. For example, in the NHS and the HSE in Ireland, they have dedicated web pages where you can start the process by contacting a mental health practitioner, a nurse, or somebody in the community. But my advice would be, recognize that there's a problem, go up to them and speak to them honestly and say, I see you're in crisis and I'm going to help you. And just by doing that, you can change a person's life. They need help and they don't know how to reach out for it. This is we call it the need-fear paradox in psychology. They need help so desperately and they wish someone would wrap their arms around them and give them a hug and say, it's going to be okay, I'm going to help you. But they fear it because they fear the judgment that might go with it. But if you approach them with an open heart and open mind and say, look, I see you're in crisis. I'm going to hold your hand through this. We're going to get you better. You think it's the first step. And I think if I ever get invited again, I certainly hope I will add a little bit extra, I think, about this, because it's a very important area. Thanks for bringing it up. I hope that gives you some idea of what you...
Thank you, Dr. Shaw. In the interest of time, we need to move on to our second speaker. That is Dr. Victor Wang. 那王正峰博士呢，是在德国波茨坦大学得到运动医学的博士学位。那他的专业领域呢，包括了运动医学、运动伤害防御、身心医学以及运动生物力学。他可能的是在博士学位的前十年呢，王博士就短暂的离学位，还出去创业。然后在这之后呢，王博士呢，在德国研究的期间呢，还得到了国际的奥会、欧洲、波罗的海与德国的国际运动学会学会的研讨会。他的研究首奖跟奖金，然后在王博士在德国为期六年的运动医学的学生制，只有十年时间离开校园，然后并在美国、台湾两个地方参与台湾大型的国际赛事筹办以及美国连锁餐厅的经营。那王博士呢，也是现任的欧洲台湾医师联盟执行长 ,EFTA 执行长，同时呢也是全球台湾医卫总会的副会长。所以谢谢王博士。Over to you. Thank you.
OK, 谢谢蔡医师的美言介绍。那我想跟各位提醒说，这个我们这次有两个这个频道啊，一个是在WebEx, 另外一个在那个 YouTube, 在台湾沙龙。如果有问题的话，可以在台湾沙龙传过来，然后我们的 moderator 会传过这个讯息，稍微晚一点哈，不过还是可以传过来给看到，讨论一起讨论。好，那我现在就先针对我今天的 presentation 做一个说明哈。那首先感谢今天的机会啊，在时间和蓝色的实施活动吧。那我这里其实就是据说这个跟有关系一样的一个切入点哈，身体伤害跟社会吸纳力哈的这个关联。那这里要说明跟那个类型的疾病哈是有分别的哈，那这部分主要那个心理疾病的部分啊，是基于病原可能是生理的或者是基因性的，在这个时候下呢，有些这边是属于社会人际之间啊差别的区别，所以一部分的重点要来了解哈，切入。好，那我就这个 bear with me 好，那我今天的大纲怎么走呢？我先会
因为之前大概两个礼拜一个礼拜了吧，台湾的一件事情就是说有一个奥运体操储备选手哈发生一件很重大的这个伤害哈。那我觉得这个体操选手他的Achilles tendon 啊，阿基里斯腱断裂这个事情哈，媒体也是声销尘上。那我觉得这个可能是今天的切入点，然后来带领说我们现在的状况在哪里，世界国际的 IOC 的情况在哪里，因为这也正是我过去20年的研究重点哈。那在德国的做的研究正好是比较德国跟台湾的奥运选手的这个运动伤害的风险这样的相关的事情，所以跟大家带一圈到认识一下国际现况，然后世界的这些运动医学的一个情况，到再到回到我们的焦点，就是这些关联是怎么一个回事哈，那现况是怎么样，那所以可能就是这样一个过程哈。好，先讲到国际奥会哈，它对于运动医学的这个推展哈。那因为在现任的国际奥会主席之前是现任是德国的 Thomas Bach 啊，那个主席。那上一任是比利时的骨科医师哈，这个罗杰哈罗格医师，他本身呢本身是医师。那国际奥会在他的推动下呢，做了在医学方面做了很大的推动啊。那他曾经在这么个这个 BJSM 的这个最有名的这个应用医学的这个期刊发表一页的一个说明哈。那这一页的说明是很简单性大纲性的东西，但是这个重点是这个五个reference 里头可能关联了400到500篇国际受到认证最重要的一个 classic 的这种研究哈的支持哈。那也就是他在期间呢对于运动这一方面在医学部分的推进是很大的一个成就。那改变了很多事情哈，让因为全世界的医学专家在运动相关的人都可以来探讨开会决定，然后推出很多的这个好几次的，现在已经有些固定的每年或是每三年都会有的这些运动医学研讨会，那我也参加很多次。那这其中包括他们就是在2009时候推出新的运动医学的这个，就是因为奥会嘛，所以是医学的典章啊，医学的 medical code 主要是handle 这个处理这运动医学运动相关的精英选手或是相关的事情。比如说consensus statement 是相关的这个重点哈，比如说从这个骨科的这个 concussion 哈，然后怎么处理，怎么去预防，到心脏科的猝死哈，那这个怎么去辨识有什么基因是风险因素，甚至到女性的这个选手，女体操选手这种什么心理跟生理结合的这个厌食症哈，那这会造成一些现象，一直到现在的也是女性男性这个性别的鉴定，这都是一些医疗相关的问题的一现象需要去界定的。那他们在那个大概十几二十年前推出很多的十几年吧推出这很多的这种 consensus statement， 那让全世界的这些医疗相关的医师们护理人员们来提供对于选手对于运动这个领域这个专业的协助跟指导，算是一个 standard criteria 这一个小标。当然这不是完美的一个地方，因为就心脏科来讲，可能有些国家特别强，像意大利他做得好，过去40年猝死率几乎是每10万人才一两个，但是有些国家可能美国还有待打跟进哈。那为什么？因为它背景有些社会因素哈，那等等等等。那这个部分其实适用于选手之外呢，其实也可以讲说在于预防伤害的部分也可以适用于社会的这精英人士，比如说运动选手精英等级的奥运选手尤其是。那么还有一些是德国是有兴趣在这个欧洲啦，可能比较强，就是说音乐家比如说首席小提琴家或是舞蹈的这个芭蕾舞的舞者那他们也有受伤害之后失去他们的那个职能跟那个职位这个很大的创伤跟很大的一个改变。那这些研究其实是可以相关，但是当然运动选手每一年每四年都会有运动比赛，每四年的运动比赛现在有个制度化的一个 也基础调查、哦、然后做检查，这个是有系统化的研究跟那个，所以可以产出很多的资料跟那个结果和、哦、关系会明确。但是当然艺术家或是舞者比较难去动员他们来做，找到他们来了，说鉴定就是一个问题，然后找到他们来大量的，这个很需要很多时间啊。那研究方法也不一样，好、啊，那么所以有定性的、定量的都有差别。那我先就针对说，我们在研究一些伤害跟疾病的时候的，从奥会的提供的一个工具来讲，也是我切入点的哈、啊，这个。的一个点，就是从这篇文章，就是这个2009发表的这个赛前的这个定期的健康检查、健康评估哈，还有那个PPE 是训练跟赛比赛前的一个健康的那个检查跟就是健康，对，健康检查评估，对，那这个部分，这两部分，一个是评估，一个检查，这个是有固定有定期的，选手必须经过这样一个制度的筛检啊，定点的，德国为例的话是有16个中心，那我们波兰大学也正好是这个中心，跟波兰的奥运中心结合，选手必须经过这个测试评估之后健康得到一个许可，才能够进行开始比如说一年前的这个训练，到奥运啊，到世界杯，那这个过程是非常的遵照这个国际奥会的这个标准的哈。那所以他们这个就是有这些东西哈。然后我在2012年的时候发起这个一个研究计划哈，那也得到国际奥会的支持，那就是把一些既有的这种限定的社会心理因素的这个问卷啊，把它重新翻译第一个，然后信度效度用在运动选手的情况啊，改编之后信度效度的测试，然后结合这个生理方面的这种调查啊，然后这样子去了解他们的运动伤害的风险因素分析。那么这过程当中运用的工具就是已有的 ILE 啊，就是生活事件调查。这个生活事件调查已经实之有年了哈。那其中的40个问题里头，包括你的生活周遭的一些会有可能造成压力的这些来源，比如说家人病故，或是离婚，或是什么社会因素哈、环境因素，那个人心理反应等等。那包括最小到说你们社区有没有这个什么搬家状况，或是建筑会影响到吵的东西，这个很细微的东西都有考虑到哈，争吵啦，同事之间的这种不和啦等等都考虑到了，你生活社会里头的这种所有的细节都考虑到。但是运动在选手里头，他们可能要强制就是界定说你是哪一段时间，所以我们有一个界定期，就是说你在这个比赛前啊的一年，那有没有发生过这个事情，那对他的影响就是可以界定清楚哈，比较能够标准化。好，那这结果的资料也是有一个名义变相的资料跟那个就是数位变相的资料，要出不同的分析统计方法等等，好，这样去考验它的信度效度等等啊。那所以也经过这个过程，花了2年时间发展这工具，然后跟德国跟台湾的奥会来做一个合作哈，然后邀请选手教练等等参与哈。另外一部分是针对医疗提供的专业的人员哈 ，MCP Medical Care Provider， 包括队医啦、护士啦、伤害防护员啦等相关的哈，在位的或者在医疗单位的能够参与，他们有资格是必须是他有帮过运动代表队的才有这个这样的所谓队医的这个情况。但是这个台湾跟德国的差异是有的，后来我可以跟大家再讲说这个差异在哪里哈。那好，那就刚才讲说这个社会心理学的了解啊，对于运动伤害或是运动疾病相关的这种情况，事实上不是只有适用在运动选手了哈。那所以我们因为是在运动医学的部门，所以我们焦聚在运动选手，可是社会上的这种精英人员哈，那甚至可以延伸扩展到消防队员，他们也是需要面对时有时无的这种紧急状况，他也要表现他的这个最佳状况去跟那个这种环境灾难抗争哈。那这个情况也 被列入考量哈，做研究哈，所以这个应用性是这样子，就说那这个东西其实上是一个身心医学的领域哈，那身心医学其实事实上是介乎生理哈跟生理跟社会心理方面的一些身心跟思维哲学方面的一些东西，但是因为我们传统的医学学科都是有划分，你是骨科、心脏科，然后精神科什么的。可是这个对于我们身体人的身体的状况，并没有因为这样划分就可以得到很有效的处置哈处理那所以说，其实它的目的跟我们医学上的这种名词定义当中的所谓的这个精神病或是心灵方面的干扰的，事实上不太一样的哈。所以这个部分就是指的是说。一种统合性的研究啊，然后基于生理方面的这种反应，然后研究他心理对于正常跟非正常的这种反应的这种研究的关系哈。那基本上这个还是一个还在起步的这个领域啊。那基本上我也是觉得一个很大的一个空间去了解哈。那好，那我们再看我们现在今天要跟各位介绍，就是说他的。这些关联哈，身体的生理疾病跟那个伤害呢，它跟心理压力之间的关系呢，可以分为三大类去找到这个证据哈。那证据有些是定性研究，也就是说是以叙述性的为主，或是调查研究哈，然后以文字或是叙述，然后呈现症状的这种归因哈。那这个已经行之有年了哈，那就是不在今天的呈现那的范围。那定量研究大概就是比较主要说以医学能够找得到的这些数据哈，生理的测试的值哈，或是对于身体的这种反应，找到比如说这个这种皮质酮或是血清素等等这些东西的来验证身体跟心理的关联哈，这个已经从90年代已经很多慢慢都走，那有些趋势可以看到大家走的哪一个方向哈。那当然就现在就是越来越多就走这个定性跟定量的一个结合的研究，那这比较复杂一点，因为你涉及到社会人群个人之外啊生理之外的反应等等哈，所以大概分这三类，那我们就一来看一下哈。有几个那个就是比较经典的研究哈，那就是说在这个我们在生理跟神经的这种反应的这个情况下，事实上可以因为压力或造成的这个人体的大脑的这种功能的改变哈，这个研究实际上很经典，是为什么？因为他在80年代就已经做了，然后很多的研究都根据他的理论一直在推造这些证实的一些研究出来哈。那这个理论其实是根据说我们大脑是有很多的这个未知功能，然后它的这个反射基于不同的社会条件或是一些生理情况，会有很多的不同的这种变数，又需要控制，所以这不仅有环境的因素，也有一些这种急性的、慢性的这种伤害的这种心理伤害哈的这种情况的发生的这种条件。那这边有个名词叫做 allostatic， 就说是同源但是异质的哈一体的这种压力哈。那这个就说在生命当中的很多的压力的源哈，它可能来自于生理的，它可能来自于心理的，或是社会的因素。那对于我们生理机能控制的中心大脑跟脑下垂体这一部分的感应是怎么样，然后它的感受跟反应是怎么回事，这个就是每个人的跟个人的差别，跟一个团体环境的互动的这个人际关系的话，这个基因这个情况是在这个研究当中可得到很多证实哈。那他从老鼠哈，从动物到人类哈，都证实说这样子的因素呢，事实上会互动的主要核心就是在于这个脑下垂体的这个反应哈，对于这个皮质酮哈cortisol 的一个产生哈。那他这个 cortisol 后来就归纳说是归因是这个压力的生理反应哈，各种社会形态心理压力的等等社会反应。那这样证据一证实之后，就是让大家可以导出一个模式和模组。那这个视图事实上很有名啊，那但是就很简单可以了解，就说一个人的生理反应其实对于压力的反应就是会有开始之后，然后会慢慢随时间结束啊，就减缓啊，比如说心跳加速或是什么样肾上腺会加速反应，然后等等这个生理的反应会慢慢因为刺激的消失就时间的减少。但如果是 长期的这样做一次两次三次四次，他正常的反应是这样子，机械式的人生理的反应，原则上理想上是这样，但是事实上发生在人体上面会有一个衰弱衰减的一个情况，这红色就是说表示你是经常暴露在长期的定固定的这样子这种风险因素的刺激下，你的生理会产生一种衰弱衰减的一个现象，也就是说越来越没有办法有能力可以反映到你该有的这个比如说这个心跳或是什么样的一个生理的反应，好，那这就是一个问题了，好，那这个情况就是说在长时间的这个暴露在长时间的社会心理压力之下，你会发现越来越发现这种可能就是会损失这个调适性的能力，好，那在这情况下就是本来这个调适如果你是正常是一个维持理想上是维持一个正常的一个程度，可是到时间实际上可能会产生一个就是说你因为长期受暴露于这样的压力社会心理压力的话，你就会损失了那个适应能力，那这个当然就是变成一种生理上的一种疾病跟伤害的一个预先的一个风险就产生了，那在很多种因素的背景环境下呢，也很多的研究就是早在70-80年代就开始做了这个研究，那现在基本上就往前更推了，那刚才那个 David 也推了很多这种生理方面基因方面的因素，跟其实跟社会心理学也有部分是相干的，比如生理反应等等，那这些不管是代谢的或是神经系统，它这个交感非副交感反应等等跟你这种皮质酮就是压力产生的因素当中有互动的因素，甚至是多元互动的情况下，事实上是需要很多的各种这种证据去一一考验哈。那在我们在最重要的那就是说我们有没有可能在这个情况下了解之后，然后对于心脏血管的因素的这种保护哈，然后预防这个任何的疾病跟伤害哈。那么促进那个免疫的功能等等哈，这个是最大的一个目标啊。那现在这个是进行中的模组，可能越来越多越清楚的部分。那另外很多人当然就是针对社会因素了哈，然后这个有些研究是针对比较属于是打下基础模式的一个方式去研究从年轻人那造成这个身体的这个心血管疾病的这个伤害的情况下是怎么发生的，那他们就把这个大概780几个这个美国的两个社区哈，两个城市的社区30-47岁哈，这个部分找到这些人，然后做长期研究之后，发现归纳出很多因素哈。那这因素它基本上就是把它一个一个对待，然后跟心脏血管的这个这些因素来做分析。主要它是做一个类似这样子基因模组分析的，就是的这种因素的归纳哈。因为同质的异体的这个压力源很多很多都是我们不晓得是生理的还是纯粹社会的还是综合生理心理社会的这个因素，所以很多的情况它就是导了进去做测验它的生理反应值，然后去归纳说这个互动关联在哪里，那这个东西是一个模组的方式去端定说压力源会造成哪些生理的反应，哪些生理反应会有哪些现象的这个归因的情况是最可能是导致这个压力造成生病或是伤害的疾病的原因，那基本上这些模组的导论呢，基本上还是跑不掉，就是生理心理这个定质量的这个分析哈。那当然是有助于我们的了解，但是这样看上乍看之下是很复杂的哈。那当然会一个一个导出来哈，然后了解到他们的优先顺序的一个情况，让我们了解说怎么去面对，怎么去预防哈。好，那基本上就是类似这样的情况，事实上很多种方式啦，在进行当中。那我有参与到的一个我们大学有一个参与的过程当中，有一部分就是比较定性的研究，就是针对说那个皮质酮哈，脑下垂体产生这皮质酮的情况是怎么样一个验证的一个科学方法，可以去找到另外一种就是研究法，那是透过头发脏东的一个皮质酮的一个沉淀然后累积物的一个测量， 那这个部分事实上也变成一种这个新的一种研究的方法。那好处是它不侵入，它是非侵入性的，然后它也不用取得血液，但是它是从非常严格的一个环境下去控制这个头发中的一种采取的样本去分析它的这个皮质酮等等相关的这些生理的因素啊。那当然对人对动物都不太一样，那么这当中呢也做了很多研究。那像我们对运动员所做的这个研究是针对他在某些情况下他有这个条件在受到压力，然后这个定义好之后符合规格啊，邀请他来参加，然后采他的头发的三公分啊，刚开始三公分，那一多一错一错的，然后把这个做很严格的这个透析分析哈，那个同位这个光谱分析，它的皮质酮等等相关的这因素在哪，那相关系数就找出来哈。那当然还有一些东西事实上是社会心理方面跟疾病有关系的哈，那这个心脏血管的因素可能是最大的一个关键。那这个有一个群体是做针对社会经济条件哈，社经条件，就是说你的比如说家庭富不富裕啊，家基础教育是什么样，工作环境什么样，这种社会经济条件的一个影响对于这个一直就是这种同源异体的这种压力哈，这种生理检测试的这种环境的因素。所以其实也蛮有趣的，他就分析说有这些这种社会条件在富裕跟贫穷之间也看得出一个差异，然后在那个工作的一个差别当中也看得到说这些反应也是因压力，因为这些差异，这是社会条件的一个差异，也会造成很明显的一种现象。但是这个并不是完全是很明确的一个证据，但是它是一个趋势的一个显现啊，会趋向哪一种反应。所以这个也是很多种不同的切入点啊的一个看法。那当然还有更明确的，就是说针对心肌梗死风险的因素的话，这个部分的研究也是有了哈。这个部分事实上是2004就已经有一个明确的一个比较 classical 的分析结果，显现说这个社会心理因素对于心肌血管的风险致死啊，这个有明确的因素分析。是你看它这个是显著差异，就是在这些这些不同的对象当中都有发现他们的这个心理因素的致死因素事实上是明显的大于没有这些生理因素这种社会心理压力的因素的这些群体。那这个都是一些例子，就是说各个不同角度去切入都有显现我们现在今天的主题，就是这个关联在哪里啊，不管是心血管或是骨科伤害等等啊，这些运动员的这些关切等等，这都是一些因素啊。那当然我们还有很多事实上需要了解，就是说在社会因素社会心理压力的来源呢，事实上也是有些是不可预知的，比如说这个外环境外资发生的这些灾难地震啊，那么战争等等，那这些造成的这种压力源，然后我们对于这些压力的来源的调试好，然后它的这些调试就是包括你是感知是怎么样的情况，那你调试的情况怎么样，那这些答案就是可以反映在其实在有些因素在透过这个我们自己的认知，我们自己的这个生理条件去做调试的情况下，有没有社会支持的这个情况下会有一个反应的差异，那这些都是我们的顾虑的对象。那抱歉这是德文版，但是基本上就是有这些研究呢是我们跟伯恩大学之间的一个互动的一些交流计划。那好，那这个其中的一个部分就是说调查这个结果是比如说年龄并不是一个负面的因素，事实上这里显现年龄越来越多大的时候，那么这个感知这个风险哈，其实是越没有压力哈，因为年纪有经验了，所以说这个事实上是负相干。那么那当然对于这个最大的两个可能性是一个恐惧的因素哈，还有是这个什么 无助感的这个因素，事实上对于心理压力是 最有相干的哈。那其他这个东西因为不是一个单一的，是复合的方式，所以它的相关性事实上也不是特别高，因为不像是一个物理性质的反应。但是这个综合的因素之后再去比如说跑这个数据去证实的话，就可以看到更高的因素结合在一起的哈。那所以基本上就是我们把这个不同因素做分析，然后了解说有些什么因素是来自于什么，那比如说恐惧跟无助感这样。所以这个情况下反倒这个生理的痛苦感没有那么预期当的高。那在这情况下就社会心理压力其实是来自于社会环境人际之间。那假设我们是针对这个情况了解，然后了解它可以让我们可以更提供不仅是个人的，是社会环境当中的一个预防机制啊，比如说提供更多社会支持，对于社会弱势啊提供更多的协助啊，然后暖心的这个协助，包括这种食衣住行相关的东西，那基本上就会减低更多的东西疾病跟伤害啊。那这个部分事实上是这个模式就看出来哈，那其实就是有很多因素，事实上是我们现在这边根据之前二三十年前做的这些研究到归导到现在可以应用。那刚才那个我们也了解说其实求助的方法很多啊，那么现在就说这个部分我们可以再往前推哈。那有一个研究是针对防火，就是救火员哈，这个消防员他们的研究，那他把他这个做一个算是一个简单的研究，那是有点久了哈，那但是基本上就是看出来说这个部分是社会支持度可以改变生活压力所造成的一些潜在影响，那社会支持度可以平衡啊，那这个可以促进这个对于算是然后就说心脏心血管方面的这种反应的这种适应性可以调整更好，而不会说就是失去了这些生理的这个基本功能。那所以这个事实上是让我们知道说这个社会支持事实上也有帮助。那社会支持包括说对于人对人际之间对于团体之间的一种舒缓的这种机制齁，也可以得到很多的这个认可齁，那这个是一个当然是一个结论齁的一个证据。好，那我们波茨坦在德国的这个部分呢，事实上在这相关的生物医学生物就是说医学跟生物跟社会心理研究领域里头算是有一个很重要的角色，我们是带领了全国的17个大专院校研究机构来做了很多这种针对整体的